Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're welcome to join us. We're going to talk about car repair, things to avoid, things that are good, all that kind of stuff. It's important that it's not important, but if you want to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five. So you got a 1 in 5 chance right now. Maybe there's a dispute between you and your wife about something. Maybe you want to ask the difference between unleaded and super unleaded. And what kind of a difference is it going to make to your car? And is it really true that giving your car super unleaded, it means it's going to love you longer and make it last longer? So those are the kind of questions we can determine. And we can talk about Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. Been around a long time, since 1983. I've known Tom since 1983. He has ASC Master Techs, and he wants to get the job done right. So if you're anywhere near the I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest Action Auto Repair. In 1988, on another radio station here in the Valley, I started the best car repair shops. After me, everybody started with their referral networks. So I was the very first one. It's not easy to get on my list. You can't be a doofus to get on my list. There's some geographical circles that I adhere to. But here's the most important part of my car repair, best car repair shops than everybody else. If you have a dispute and an independent arbitrator determines that the shop should give you money or perform a repair, and the shop doesn't, then I will, up to $5,000. So an independent arbiter, like would be from Better Business Bureau or something like that, it would be where the customer and the shop both talk to the arbitrator and he makes the decision. So remember, I got your back for $5,000. That's if the shop refuses. It's only happened once. I didn't actually remove the shop because at the last minute, the shop decided to pony up some money and make the customer happy. And the customer was happy. He told me that. So that's what it's all about, the best car repair shops. And we already have a caller. Gil?
That would be Henry.
Henry, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I have 2 points. Last week you had said that if you change the size of the tire, that'll affect the speedometer accuracy, correct?
Yes.
So on my 2006 Suzuki Bergman 650 scooter, I have the factory rim and tire, and the numbers are 5 off. I measured it with your Speedbox app. And I went online and I found out that there's a programming issue in the digital speedometer that causes it to have a 5-mile-per-hour discrepancy.
Yeah, that's happened before. It has nothing to do with the tires. I wanted to tell people that if they enhance or make the tire bigger, it's going to throw the speedometer off, or if they make it smaller. That was really, but in your particular case, that's happened to more than your vehicle, and you would just get a hold of the manufacturer's representative or the dealer here in town and ask them if they're willing to upgrade the software for your dashboard and your speedometer.
Awesome, good. And have you ever heard of anyone trying to, I guess for lack of a better term, use a sting operation on a auto repair shop, saying that there was something wrong and it wasn't or whatever, and seeing if the shop would say, yeah, you're right, you do need a new one, when they don't?
Well, that's happened I don't know how many times. There was a technical guy that was a former auto shop teacher, Jerry Rosenbluth, and he was a consultant to the industry like I am, for police departments, insurance companies, plaintiffs and defendants, blah, blah, blah. And Jerry was involved in a lot of those. For me, because I'm a public person, I declined. But I think either in the past 6 months or in the future 6 months, there's someone out there that's going to be looking at us repair shops again. And the answer is yes. It's a easy sting to do. It's pretty easy to figure out who the good guys and the bad guys are. And oftentimes it's blatantly wrong. So they told you something and it's blatantly wrong. So yes, the answer is I think those will continue through my life, and nobody knows when they're starting unless.
And would that qualify any of the shops on your list to be removed from your list after thorough investigation into it?
There's no question they would be suspended the minute I knew. And then I would wait until it was over with to determine who the insurance companies or the authorities, and then I would make a final decision, but they would be suspended immediately.
Thank you, sir, for everything you do.
All right, Henry, thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we got another caller. Who might that be?
Hey, hello to Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I'm an 88-year-old fan. I have not missed a morning for 5 years, and I just love your show.
Thank you.
I listen religiously every Saturday morning. I love it when you say, don't get your undies in the bundle.
I caught a lot of flack from that, Elizabeth.
You did? Well, I'm telling you. My son and I listen to your show every Saturday morning, and there are things about your show that we both love, but I am an ardent fan. If you have any more 88-year-old fans, well, I'm the best.
And you know what? I'm quite sure that you hold that position all by yourself. And thank
you
for that.
So?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I'll tell you what, I'll bet you $100 nobody can call in and prove what you just said. They've done that. And it's really it's a conglomeration of things. Your age, how long you've been listening to me, and you know a lot of the things that I say and do aren't necessarily completely welcomed by everybody. But, you know, I've always been kind of the Dennis the Menace kind of person. To which my mother and father said, we'll certainly come back to bite you. But so far, I still got my back pockets on my Levi's. So,
well, you are the high point of my Saturdays, Mark. If that makes your day, good.
Well, I'm gonna ask you to call in every once in a while when I get a car question about an old car. So I'll just say, Elizabeth,
you
give me a call.
Give me a call. I'll be on your list. Okay.
Thank you very much.
I don't promise to know the answer, but I can sure try.
Well, you and I are going to be able to talk in a general sense because you have been in cars that most of us have never ridden in nor driven.
This is true.
And so you
this
can talk
true.
About when you were young and your father and your mother got their first car and how fast it went and how many times your dad broke down and he had to fix it right there. Those are the kinds of things that many of us have never experienced. So I intend to do that. Okay?
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Have a great day.
And same to you, ma'am. Whew. I don't think I'm ever going to live to be as long as Elizabeth. My wife says that she knows exactly how I'm going to die, and it's going to be a bullet wound, and the gun will be in her hand. I'm just teasing you. Who we got next?
We have Jack.
Jack, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. Hey, I've got some interesting symptoms for you.
Okay.
I have a 2014 Avalon with about 75,000 on it. And during the last 6 months, maybe 9 months, there's something going on. I think it's in the front end. When I apply the brakes, it doesn't happen the same all the time either. It feels like a grabbing or a wobbling when I brake.
Okay.
And in particular, you know, I don't know. The symptoms are different. Today I drove it. It had been raining, so the roads were a little bit wet, and the rotors, the brakes, everything was just smooth as can be. Yesterday I drove it for about an hour on a little bit of a distance trip, and it had all kinds of grabbing or wobbling or vibration in the front, something like that. Do you have any idea what might be going on?
Well, tell me what you see, feel, or hear that points you towards the front.
I feel a vibration. There's a vibration when I'm sitting there, and I apply the brakes to slow down, and it changes with speed.
Okay.
If I'm going, say, 70, and I apply the brakes, there's a very fast kind of wobble or vibration.
Okay, but hold on.
If I slow down to a stop, it changes.
Are you feeling this vibration in the seat of your pants, in your hands on the steering wheel? You see the rearview mirror vibrating? Tell me.
Good question.
Okay.
It's more of the seat of my pants. It's more of a feel, more of the seat of the pants, I'd say.
Okay. Pay attention to that. because that's going to help us isolate the front end of the back end. If you have a vibration in the front end, there's no question, if you notice it, you're going to feel it in your feet, or you're going to feel it in the steering wheel, or you're going to see the rearview mirror vibrating. Now, the rearview mirror can vibrate with the rear problem as well, but the steering wheel is the real key here. But you can't make it happen on demand. You just have to live with the intermittent part of it.
Yeah, that's the really strange thing.
Okay. Do you have a garage that you like and have used in the past?
Yeah, I
okay.
do.
Okay. It's not uncommon for a customer to come to us and say, I've got this problem, it's intermittent. We have this technician named Eddie who's been with us for 32 years, and so far he hasn't wrecked a customer's car. He hasn't got a DUI in a customer's car. He's a really good guy, and he lives 55 miles away. So,
oh boy.
If you said to your shop, I've got this intermittent problem, I can describe under what conditions it sometimes happens, and would it be, or could it be, or can I leave the car here, and either you, Mr. Owner, or maybe the technician that's been with you a long time that has great diagnostic skills, could you guys take it home for a night and then decide if you find something? That's not uncommon. That's not uncommon.
Oh, okay.
So if here's what I hear you saying, though. You think it's in the back end, and it starts with a brake application.
I'm trying to describe the symptoms best I can.
But it starts with a brake application.
But you're the expert.
Okay, but what I'm saying is when you're driving down the road and you're listening to your wife and you're looking at the beauty of the earth, it doesn't happen there. It starts with a brake application.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's important.
Only when I brake.
Okay. Now, a physical inspection might be the appropriate thing, too. You say to them, I've got this vibration that's noticeable, that's intermittent. How much is a brake application? Now, here's what you could do. You say, how much is a tire rotation? And they go $15. And you say, okay, while you got all the tires off, would you inspect the brakes? And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes, you know, we're on a brake inspection, then you go, okay, it's $25. And sometimes they go, how much is a tire rotation? You say, $18.50. And then they go, okay, you're right there, the tires are off. Would you give my brakes a close inspection? And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that you need to know that that's now they may say, hey, a brake and a alignment's both, you know, $25. I'll do both of them at the same.
Yeah.
And really it's nothing more than 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of your time to do a brake inspection. So it's no real big deal. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for calling. Brake issue. I'm going to write that on my log. Okay, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a story. It's about a guy who went to a shop, and then he calls me. And then you're going to, well, I'll tell you the answer in a minute.
Phoenix.
Okie dokie. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and very trusted source for complete auto repair. I've known Chuck since 1970. He's the owner. He's still in business. He's still a good guy. And his son, Derek, the second generation, just like my kids, are part of the future. So if you're in Sun City and you're looking for a garage, then I'd like to suggest Automotive Dynamics, where they're not paid, the technicians aren't paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. So therefore, Derek says there's no possibility that they're going to sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. So Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Okay, if I had a drum roll, I'd do it. Guy writes down, I have a 2000 Lexus RX350 with 93,000 miles. The air conditioning blows cold, but it goes about 4 to 6 to 8 months, and then it blows warm, and then I go have it recharged. So about 3,000 miles every 4,000 miles, somewhere around there, it goes from cold to hot. The repair shop can't find a leak. They said I need a new condenser for $1,800. They claim they have to tear the dashboard to reach the condensers. This seems goofy. And then he says, is this likely to be a bad condenser? Do you really have to tear out the dash? Should it cost $1,800? Can you recommend a shop? Okay, let's start at the beginning. We have an air conditioning leak somewhere. The shop can't find it. Now, I want to change the verbiage here because the condenser's not in the dashboard. It's the evaporator. So there's two components. The condenser's in front of the radiator, and the evaporator is the ice box underneath your dash on the passenger side. So we're going to talk about the evaporator because that's what the customer really meant, and the under-the-dash stuff is helps me identify that. So this is what I tell him. I say, isn't it ironic that they can't find the leak, but they're sure it's in the most expensive place you can possibly go into? To go into the dashboard, behind the dashboard on the passenger sides, on many new cars, front seats are come out, the console comes out, the steering column comes out or is dropped down and disconnected. Then the dashboard from the left side to the right side comes out. That's a lot of labor. You better make sure you have a technician that can find all the screws and put them all back where they went, because it's a real sin to start off with 41 screws and then end up with three. That's a bad deal. So they've decided that they have to tear out the dashboard because it only can be the evaporator. It can't be a Schrader valve. It can't be a connection. It can't be the nose seal on the compressor. It can't be at the condenser, either one of the two fittings. It can't be here. It can't be there. It has to be behind the dash. Folks, Elizabeth, if you're paying attention, that really wads up my underwear. How convenient. Now, two possibilities. The shop doesn't have the skills to do it, so they think it's there. Or they really know it's over here and it's real easy, but we're going to do that. So there's two possibilities, and I don't know which it is. So I said to him, we have the ability to find it with dye. So we put dye in the refrigeration system, and we have you go drive it for a couple days. Then you bring it back. We put on these funky glasses, and we have this light, and we look. Now, some of us use orange dye and green dye and purple dye. Who cares? We're going to look for the color. So we're going to start at the air conditioning compressor and do the nose and the back of the connections. Then we're going to follow the lines all the way to the evaporator, which is under the dash. Then the evaporator has a line that goes to the condenser. We're going to check that. We're going to check the condenser, and then we're going to check back to the back of the compressor. We'll find it somewhere. We're going to check both the system connections where we add refrigerant, because those will leak. So we're going to do all of that. Now, it's true that we can't see the evaporator, but we can go up through the bottom, and there's a drain. And you've all seen it, because it drains cold water in the winter or in the summertime. So we'll go up in the drain. We'll still put dye in it, but we'll go up in the drain, and we'll look around and see if we can see. And see, when you have a refrigeration leak underneath the dash, behind the driver or the passenger side, it's going to gather up dirt. So it's an oil-based refrigerant. So there's going to be some dirt around there. Now, if we decide to do it, sometimes we can just shoot some water into one of the vents. Of course, we're going to do our best to make sure it doesn't go over the passenger side floorboard. But we're going to, on the other end, we're going to have a towel, and we shoot a little water in there, and then we have the towel, and then we shine the light on it, and it's full of dye. Well, bingo, bingo. But I just object to the idea that it can only be the most expensive repair because we can't find it. That's kind of like saying we've looked at 20 places and we can't find it, but we have to know it's air condenser or the evaporator and it's $1,800. I don't buy that. So I told him to go someplace else. There has to be somebody out there that has better skills than those people. We can check the evaporator, and a lot of times, like we pulled one out. If you go to Instagram and look at Salem Boys Auto, we pulled one out the other day of the dash, and you can see the cars apart. And we shine the light on it, and the thing's like lime green. Well, there's no question. We just got it. When I talk to my techs, probably one out of every 100 leaks, air conditioning Freon leaks, is actually the evaporator behind the glove box. And that could be a fitting to the evaporator, but those fittings are in front of the firewall. So they're in the engine compartment 99% of the time. So when you look at the big picture, at my shop you got 1 in 10 or 1 in 100 chance that it's going to be the evaporator. Now, it is true that the air conditioning compressor is going to be kind of expensive, But really and truly, this is the doctor says, I can't find what's wrong with you, but I want to saw the top of your head off and look in your brain, and that is going to be the most expensive procedure we'll use. Come on. So, alrighty, my panties are no longer watered up, Elizabeth. And who might we have right now?
We have Pete.
Pete, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I have a question for you. I know that oils like Mobil 1, Castrol Edge, and Royal Purple, they're all racing oils. But is it okay if you use those in a normal application for possibly longer engine life, better performance?
No.
2 minutes.
No, it's not a good idea for you to assume those marketing strategies because, first of all, you're not racing your car, and the oil temperature when you're racing the car is much higher, and the lubricity is much more important, and the ability to carry the metal away and have it go through the filters, that's kind of important. So this is kind of a good feel oil. And you said it at the very, and I'm not making fun of you, but it's the, oh, my car's going to love me more if I use a racing oil, or my car's going to last longer. Nothing is further from the truth. Now, let's pretend like engine oil has a 1 to 10 range. The racing oils are certainly 8s. Conventional or the regular oils in the middle. And then there's some cheap junk out there that would be 2 or 3. Yeah, less than 5. You probably won't get the life, and you may have some problems that were contributed or caused by cheap oil.
1 minute.
But
I see.
Using racing oil is, and for the two reasons you said, longer life and better performance, no. The answer is no. If you want to do something fast, take all the weight out of your car and all your wife's case of beer in the trunk, and it'll run better. Okay?
Yeah, you're right. I just bought a new Silverado, and Chevy recommends, of course, AC Delco, full synthetic.
Right.
And I just was wondering if that's the best oil I can use for the truck.
The Dexos, that's called a Dexos. Any weight that's in synthetic is as good as that one or even better. So I am of the opinion that the reason they want you to use their oil is because they want that $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $8,000 shot at you, or miles shot at you. So let's bring them back in. And let's say that we have the own oil that will work in their car. That way we get to look at the tire rotations and the brakes and all that stuff. And we'll be back right after this. Well, thank you for coming back. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. If you have a particular car problem where every time you open up the glove box, the driver's side window drops down, it's a good idea to find somebody who's kind of extra special about your car. Not necessarily, but it's a good idea. If you have a diesel, and every time you get in and you start it, then your radio comes on and it blows pink smoke, then strictly diesel would be a great place to go. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. They do a really good job with service repair. They work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. But Nate will also do your car oil changes and tire rotations and stuff like that. So he wants to be both, but he's really good, and that's why the name of it is Strictly Diesel. Okay, we were talking about this fancy oil. There's a law out there, it's called the Magnuson-Moss Act, and it got started because many of the vacuum cleaner people back in the 60s and 70s said you had to use their bags in the vacuum cleaners. Well, the Magnuson-Moss Act says that if you have to use their products, they have to provide them for free. So when you have an engine or you have a car you bought, and the dealer has a special magic oil made from the urine of elephants, and you have to use that, then they have to provide it. The fact of the matter is they tell you need to use their oil, but really and truly, ask them, well, if I don't use the oil, does that void my warranty? If I use a like oil of a different brand, like Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, Chevron? And the answer is no, it's not going to affect your warranty. So it's a good idea. You see, all of us in the auto repair industry, we have what we call RCOs, reoccurring sales opportunities. And the fact of the matter is, it's called an oil change. So when you come in, we get to do your oil change, but we also need to look over your car. And I would say 85% of us play it by the rules, and we're supposed to tell you what you'll need in the future and what you need right now, and the prices of both. And that's what you really want, is an oil change is not an LOF, lube oil filter. It's an inspection that you happen to change the oil at. So it's just an inspection, and that's an important consideration, just an inspection. So I don't put Dexos oils in my Chevrolets. I use a good quality Chevron oil. And when they came out with Dexos, they just add effectively what would drip off the end of one of your hairs if you happen to put water in it. They put like a tenth of a drop of something special in there, and then they can call it whatever they want. The fact of the matter is that there's only four places that make oil, and that's Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. They make everything else, and they just put it in a bunch of different bottles. That's all there is to it. So just be careful and ask the right questions. So if you have to use the oil, then I think you have to pay or you guys have to provide it for free. But just remember, Magnuson-Moss Act. Most attorneys know what that is anyway. And, of course, attorneys aren't the smartest tool in the drawer because they don't listen to the car show on Saturdays between 10 and noon. But there are some attorneys that are pretty good guys. There's a repair shop in Mesa called Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's a good guy. He's been around a long time, but more important, they're like the second or third generation of their respective families. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are the salt of the earth, and when you meet them, you'll understand why Mark Salem thinks that they're the best shop in Mesa. Now, there's other shops in Mesa. Some of them have applied and couldn't make the grade. Some of them hadn't been in business long enough. Some of them had some bad reviews. So there's reasons why we typically say thanks but no thanks. But we also don't put a bunch of shops on top of one another either, so we give them kind of an exclusive area. Well, Thompson's is on Main Street in Stapley, just east of Stapley, and they're there for a reason, and they're a good shop. And, Gil, what else did you say to me?
A minute and a half.
Oh, a minute and a half. He's just kind of warning me about if I hit any of my brakes. But, see, let me tell you a secret. I have to hit the bottom of the hour, the 30 brake, on the button. I can't do it at 29:45. Because Gil uses bad words when I do that, because he has this little computer in front of him. And so when it goes 58, 59, 60, he has to push a button. Okay? So if I miss that, then on the top of the hour, it's 58:50. So 58 minutes after the hour and 50 seconds after the hour, that's 58:50, I have to be out. And if I keep talking, you'll hear me talk, but then you'll hear me cut off, because Gil is got to keep all the brains happy. But the 20 mark and the 40 mark are kind of flexible. So Gil knows that I may hit those, but I may be 3 or 4 minutes one way or the other. And really, no one cares. So it's now 39:42, and I'm going to walk you to the 40 mark. So look at your clocks, and when I get there, you better change your time. So 51, 52, 53, 54. Get ready. It's going to change. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
If you listen to this radio station for 20...
That was pretty good. when you said 10, there was a drum beat that went boom. That's perfect.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of people that... Well, I'm remiss in not giving the phone number out. 602-508-0960. We're at 960 AM, so 602-508-0960. We have one taken by Jody, and then we have four available. So if you want to give us a call, now's the time. Jody, you're up first.
Well, you are remiss. I had to go online and look up the phone number, even though I've listened to your show for decades.
Jody, let's put the blame where it deserves to be, okay? My director and my engineer is Gil. He's the one that's flying the plane. I'm sitting in the first class section just kind of, no one knows what I'm wearing just because I could have my pajamas on. but it's his fault. Cut and dried, it's his fault. So I'm sorry on behalf of you. Okay.
Absolutely. I recently acquired from my uncle as a gift before he passed away a car that he loved, a 92 Lexus SC300, which is a neat old car, but it's old, and it's got a few issues. The inside door handle on the passenger door, the rod came disconnected from the handle itself.
Piece of cake.
And no, yeah, I thought so, too. The rod has dropped down. It's still connected. There's a box there, the cable-operated door handle. You know, the cables go to this box at the latch, you know, the latch that goes to the striker.
Okay.
And I can't, you know, I got to it. I unscrewed the latch, but it's behind the window track. I can't get the track out of the way to get the box out of there to try to flip that rod back up. It's stuck hanging upside down. And I don't know if it's disconnected on the inside. I can't get the cover off because it's behind the window track. And I've decided I need professional help. Now, I am a customer of your shop, and I wanted to know, is this the kind of thing your guys would be best at? Or should do you think maybe a body shop would be better suited for this job? And can you recommend someone?
You know, I think... I can tell you, certainly a body shop with a seasoned gray-haired technician probably has replaced the guts of a door like this before. It's not uncommon for us to have to move stuff in order to make the job easy. That's not uncommon at all. So if we have to take the window glass and the regulator out to get this stupid lock rod to act together, then that's what has to happen.
Because
go ahead.
The screw that is in the way of holding that piece of track end down at the bottom is completely stripped out. It would probably have to be drilled out and replaced. I think it's a screw. It may be a rivet.
Okay.
It's hard to tell at this point.
Yeah. No, it's this isn't on a 1 to 10 scale. This might be a 5. It's not the most difficult thing. Virtually every one of my guys, except the young man that does our oil changes, could handle this. If you're a customer of mine, I'm going to give you a 50% discount on our $400 an hour labor rate. Is that okay?
No. It was 122, I think, last time I brought my Avalon in.
I know. I think we've gone up, but I'm not sure. But the kids handle that, and it's based on the geographical. Andy, my daughter, surveys everybody around us in a five-mile radius.
Right.
And
right.
We then take the average plus a tad. So if the average is 130, then we'll go to 131 or 132. So we're not the highest dog, we're not the lowest dog, but we're right there at 60%, which is what we think we are. So with respect to that. So the answer is yes. As far as an estimate's concerned, there's books that we look at to replace the guts of a door, and they would probably bid that. They don't know until we get in there what we need, but we've made rods before. We have plastic clips. We have a lot of that kind of stuff. So it shouldn't be that difficult for us to figure this out.
Yeah, the rod is there. It's the plastic clip where it hooks into the handle is half of it is gone.
Okay,
so.
And see, a lot of times if the clip isn't there, 99% of the time we can find a clip for it, then we just drill a hole through the rod, put a washer on there, and put a cotter pin on there, and we're done. So it's like I said, it's just though the kinds of things that scare you don't scare us at all. So and depending on you can call around and just say to them, I need you to reattach the lock rod and tell me what kind of labor it is. Most all of us are just going to do the window regulator. We're going to bid the window regulator because in our labor stuff it doesn't have lock rod. So you say, okay, well you got to pull the regulator out of it, and then that window comes with it. So that's what I would do. Okay.
But your shop is closed today, correct?
Yeah, I know we can take care of this. If you're my customer, I know we can take care of it. But I want you to make the decision what's best for you. So if you live clear across town, there might be a better shop, and go to marksalem.com and look at our best car repair. But if you're within a mile or two or in Ahwatukee or you're south of the 60 in Tempe, then I think we're a pretty good shop.
Yeah, I'm just north of the 60, Tempe, southern in the 101.
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
I've been using you for the last few years.
Okay, all right. Well, hopefully we haven't let you down, and if we do, then you can email me or you can talk to my daughter, Andy, who's really in charge, and she knows more about cars than most of the guys that work for me. So I'm pretty proud of her. And she has a BS meter that like nobody else has. So she's just really, really good with the old BS meter. So if she goes outside and says, Mr. Jones says that the brake lights don't work anymore, and he says, oh, well, that's not my fault. And she says, you were just under the dash next to the brake pedal. The switch is right there, too. You were in that general vicinity, and now all of a sudden the brake lights don't work, and it's not your fault, and you know that. Well, I'm not going to buy that. No one knows whose fault it is till we get it fixed. And I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to have John do the repair, and if it is your fault, then we're going to back charge you that amount. And if it's not your fault, then the customer will pay for it. So that's kind of, she's got that kind of ability. And the guys respect her, and frankly, she has a bark and then a bite, and it happens once a year, and it usually happens to the same tech. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And, oh, you want me to take another call now,
sure.
Huh? Okay, well, go ahead.
All right, it's Bobby.
Bobby, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, I had a question about that synthetic oil that says on it that it's made from natural gas. You know anything about that?
No, but they use natural gas to make most oil. It's during the process of creating the oil. So, yeah, it's no big deal.
Because I think it's Chevron.
Yeah.
It's big on the bottle that they make a big point of made from natural gas.
Okay. Well, I pour Chevron, hundreds and hundreds of gallons of Chevron, and I'm not going to soft pedal because you said it's Chevron, but they all have these marketing strategies that are made by some pinhead college graduate who's never sold anything in his life, and he's going to write up that says, our oil has been filtered by 4 baby diapers, so we can guarantee that we're not going to have any poop in our oil. This is the kind of marketing strategy they all have, and they talk about that they're better than everybody else, but in reality, on blind tests, we know that they aren't. It's really a matter of the relationship between the shop and the vendor. That's what's really important. So if we do have a problem with an oil-related issue, I know Chevron's going to stand up and say, let's get some oil out of it, let's have it analyzed, and let's see if we screwed up or Mark screwed up. Maybe Mark put the wrong oil in it, which never happens. I don't make mistakes. Nevertheless, that's the relationship that's important. Is my
oil standing there?
Anyway.
I was wondering how they could condense gas into oil.
You know, I don't think so. I think natural gas is used in the process of, and natural gas does burn a whole lot better than lighter fluid, and using oil to create heat. So natural gas might very well be, and I'm just guessing here, but somebody will correct me and I'll have the answer next week. But I think natural gas is just creating the perception, oh, maybe it's an environmental position where they're using that as, hey, we're green. Okay, well, you're making engine oil, and so you want me to believe now you're green. That's not normally the case, but I don't have an answer for you. But I will next week, I promise.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
All right.
Alrighty. Oh, boy. Natural gas. And just a minute, Gil. Just a minute. Gas used in oil. Oil manufacturing. All right, who's next?
That would be Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Appreciate your show and your information. Need your help. I've got a 2008 Equinox, about 80,000 miles, and occasionally when I turn off the car, the key is stuck in the ignition and won't come out. And tried multiple things, looked at the owner's manual, and they instructed to make sure your tires are straight, and it still won't come out. And this is during daylight hours. And then at night, I have a spare key, which I can lock the door, and there's still a key in the ignition. But then at night, the lights automatically turn on, and I need to go out and then able to turn the lights off with the light switch, you know, on the steering wheel. But this happens very sporadically, maybe, you know, once a month for the last couple of months. And
okay, does it happen at home? When you park it at home, does it happen? Okay. All right.
Yes.
The number one cause of this is just we have a load on the steering wheel. So what I want you to do is next time you're going to shut it off, I want you to pull forward. I want you to apply the parking brake before you do anything else. Then let go of the parking brake, put it in park, and take the steering wheel now. And so you're still running, and you've applied the parking brake. We've unloaded the car. Otherwise, it's in a neutral position. Your hands on the steering wheel, and then you're going to reach over and you're going to turn the key off. And if it sticks, I want you to wiggle the top of your hand at 12 o'clock on the steering wheel, just a little left and a little right while you maintain some semblance of pressure on the ignition switch. So, and see what happens is on some cars, when you turn the steering wheel left or right, it kind of locks up the key. So you have to wiggle the steering wheel, and then the key comes right out. That's 50-50. I'm 50-50 on that guess. The second one would be is we put a new lock cylinder in the steering column and you're done. We're going to give you new keys with that lock cylinder, but we just take the steering column apart, replace the lock cylinder. But we have to verify it's the lock cylinder or it's the ignition switch because they're two different places. The lock cylinder is where the key goes, but then typically there's a mechanical something that goes to the ignition switch, which then goes into the crank mode and the run mode. So there's a bunch going on here, but to be honest with you, I think I have a 50-50 chance if you'll just kind of rock that steering wheel and then turn the key off. I think you'll say, oh, rocking the steering wheel is fine. If that's the case, then just figure out a way to park that's better. I remember one lady, she'd pull into her driveway, and it was a circular one, and it was also uphill. So she'd pull into her driveway, she'd turn right, she'd go uphill, she'd put it in park, and then she couldn't get the key out. I said, go to the other side of the hill, because you're going up on the driveway this side. Go on the downside and see what happens. She says, it's still the same. I said, okay, now I want you to stop at the crown of the driveway. And I just kind of want you to wiggle the steering wheel, then shut it off, take your key out. She says, that works every time. Okay, it's just the environment that was causing her problem. I can't fix it.
2 minutes.
All I can do is tell her what I think it is. And I think her and I together figured that out. So it's not uncommon. I can tell you right now, I have a couple of big trucks I park up at our horse property on a slope. And it's not uncommon for me to have that same problem where I can't get it out of park. So then what I do is I come to a stop. I'm facing downhill. I set the parking brake first, and then I put it into park. And everything's fine when I come back out. It's just a matter of there's a load on all of these things that are help keeping them tight. And if you release the load, then all these teeth are just real loose with one another, and that's what happens. 602-508-0960. We have another hour of fun and frivolity. And if you have a car question or car problem, then now's the time to get in. We're going to be back at about 3 minutes after the top of the hour. So by the time I get done, it's going to be about 4.5, 5 minutes. So you might have to wait a little while, but then again, who cares? What you do is you call and you give me your make and model of the car and how many miles, and then you describe the symptoms. This is what it's doing. What do you think it is? And then I'm going to ask you questions. I'm going to say left, right, up, down, Sunday morning, Friday afternoons, that kind of stuff. So we have this dialogue back and forth. That's the most important part of diagnosing a car, is face-to-face time with the customer. Or, if the customer will agree, taking a ride with the customer and letting the customer demonstrate the problem, demonstrate the noise, demonstrate the vibration, demonstrate that the air conditioning is ice cold, then it goes hot, and then it comes back ice cold. Those are the kinds of things. And please be prepared to have your shop ask you to do that. So the question is, can you duplicate the problem? The answer is either yes or no. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. This is the Patriot KKNT at 960 on your AM dial. We'll be back in a minute.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about a really great shop in the Phoenix area that does transmission work, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since 1968. They know what they're doing. They know how to diagnose transmission problems. Intermittent ones are kind of tough. Sometimes you got to say, wait till it gets worse and easier to find. But leaks and no shift, those are kind of easier to deal with. Not less in money, but easier to deal with. So if you ever go up and down Washington, at 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road is Automatic Transmission Exchange. good guy, knows what he's doing, and has been fixing transmissions. And unlike some of the transmission guys other in our market that have decided to do tune-ups and oil changes, those kinds of crossovers bother me because I've hired those kinds of guys since 40 some odd years, 40 plus years. They know transmissions, but because they've been lasting longer, they've decided to present themselves as the God only, or the God kind of diagnostician and repair guy. And frankly, it's kind of like a veterinarian turning himself into a brain surgeon. That's going to be kind of a tough thing to do. So if you do that, it's okay with me. I'm just saying to you, or I'm actually offering you an opinion that that may not. You don't want the guy who's at a body shop tuning up your port fuel injected, adjustable timing, newer car. I'm just suggesting that that's not the right place. But likewise, you're not going to have a guy like me who's a mechanical guy replace and paint your hood. That's equally as stupid. and I can't do that, and I don't know how to do that. 602-508-0960. They say this is a paid programming. And yes, it is. The best car repair shops pays for me to be on the air, and I talk about them. That's exactly it. But I've been doing this since 1988. The real focus is I remember when I first got on the radio, my mother, my mother's gone, but her business sense was second to nobody I've ever met in my life. But when I first started on the radio, she said, "You're thumping your chest a lot, and I don't like it." She says, "You're talking a lot about your shop, and I don't like it. I think it takes away from your message." And she says, "So I think you should stop doing that." And I said, "So what do I talk about?" And she says, "Well, don't you have friends in the industry, other repair?" I said, "Yeah, talk about them. Send people to them." Well, what she told me was the best thing anybody told me. Now, I learned from really great radio people how to do the radio show. But I went from thumping my chest to, "Hey, you live near 43rd and Bethany Home? Bruce Automotive is right around the corner." Bruce is not there anymore. I'm just using that as an example. So I was able to redirect them to a shop I trusted in their geographical area. You can't imagine what that did to my business, because I go weeks and months without naming my business. And that's not the purpose of this, is for me to thump my chest and have all of you come to me. My purpose is to educate you about the good guys and the bad guys in our industry, and to send you to a shop that I already know does a good job. So that's kind of how we got here, but I've been doing radio since 1988. Cars have changed to data since 1988. And the vehicle emissions program was huge back in the 1979 actually to air. So it's kind of difficult. I know I said 88, but it was really 79 when we first started working on cars. And we opened up a mobile station in Ahwatukee, and most people didn't even know how to spell it, and I was included in that group. So when you have a car repair, now I want to go back to a gentleman who called and said that he took it in to have an air conditioning thing issued, and they told him that they wanted to tear apart the dash and replace this component underneath the dash for $1,800, and I objected to that. Because they picked the most expensive portion of the air conditioning system, and there's no guarantee if they couldn't find it, then this is if we can't find it, then it has to be here. That's just not good enough for me. One of my technicians would never say that to me. I want to see, I don't, but I want you to be prepared to show me where the leak's at and tell me how you know that, with dye or with the Freon sensor or whatever. So anyway, he writes back, "Is it likely to be the evaporator underneath the dash on the passenger side or not?" I can tell you unequivocally that 80% of the time the diagnosis on the evaporator underneath the dash is wrong. A technician has done the process of elimination. Second question, do you have to tear out the dashboard to reach the evaporator? The answer is yes. There's no other way. You can't magically pull it through the vent. It's like a little box that's probably 10 inches by 10 inches by 2 inches thick. So yeah, you have to go dig it out. Should it cost $1,800? It's all labor. And not only is it labor, but we have to take the dash apart, we have to take the Freon out of the system. We have to disconnect the evaporator. We have to bring it out. We have to match it up. We have to put it back in with new O-rings. We have to pull a vacuum on it. So we're going to make sure that it does hold vacuum now. It does hold pressure. And then we're going to put the dashboard back together, and we hope that we do it right. And we hope everything on the passenger side of the dashboard is going to work when we're done. Then we go underneath the hood, and we add refrigerant to it. And then we double-check all of our fittings one more time, and then we're done. So it is an expensive repair. And last but not least, can you recommend a repair shop near the 101 in Shea Boulevard? And I send them to Tom Blackwell, which is at Greenway and 40th Street, just north of there. I know Tom can check that down. And I've got a call in to Tom because I want to know where he found the leak. Now, he could have found the leak in the evaporator case. That's possible. And but I'm not wrong. I'm just saying they said that we checked everything else and it has to be the evaporator. I object to that thought process. So I don't know what noise you have underneath your hood, but I think the answer is we need to replace the engine. Would that fly with most of you? And there's no guarantee that replacing the engine? So Mr. Shop Foreman or whoever, you can't find the noise, but you think it's related to the engine and you want to replace the engine. Is that what I heard you say? Yes. Well, I'll take my keys back and let's get the heck out of Dodge. So I can't tell you how many really great shops there are in the Valley. There are. There's guys that just do a good job. There's guys that have been around a very long time. And I must admit to you that we would all agree confidentially that we weren't the best shop owners when we first started. You kind of learn that. You have to be a mechanic, technician, and you have to be a business person. You have to be a consumer advocate, but you have to take care of your employees. Then you have parts, and they all have different part numbers, and they all have different boxes that they come in. So you've got all these dynamics swirling around in front of you. An airplane pilot has it pretty easy because he's just sitting there, and he's got all the stuff in front of him. The guy that runs the auto repair shop has to deal with vendors and customers and employees. He has to deal with parts and costs associated with parts and what you're going to sell them for, warranty issues. He has to make sure there's communication between the shop and the customer. So don't be one of those customers that just walks in and dances the keys across the counter and says, call me later with an estimate, it's got a bad vibration, and walk out. Because most of us don't like that. That's just real counterproductive. And there's some shops that'll say, okie dokie, I'll find your vibration, but it may take me 10 hours at $120 an hour, so it's going to cost you a lot of money, and I'm going to drag my feet and have lunch in the middle of that because you're a jerk. So those are the kinds of things that you learn when you're gray-haired like me and a lot of other guys. So the bottom line is, Steve, who sent that in, we talked about all these and all the answers, and I still stand by that. And I told him to go to Blackwell Automotive. Tom's a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. He can find this. There's a lot of us. All you have to do is drop the gauntlet. It's walk in the shop and say, I'm a new customer, but whether this is true or not, everybody I've talked to said that you guys are the best ones to do this work. A lot of people don't want to do the work because they say the tracking down of a refrigerant leak or the tracking down of a symptom is kind of difficult. So, but I was told that you guys had the ability to track down my vibration, even though it's intermittent, and to bid the repair, and then come in under your estimate, and then eliminate my problem after I pick the car up. So that's kind of why I'm here. That's what the relationship should be. Wives, your husband says to take the car into the shop, and he describes to you what he thinks. Most of the time, he describes to you what he thinks it is. He doesn't even share the symptoms with you. So, wives, you walk in, you're greeted, and you say, well, you know, I got my customer's car here, or my husband's car here, and so I'd like you to check something on it. And they write it all up and get your name, address, and phone number and all that jazz. And then they say, okay, well, tell us what's wrong. And you just hand them your husband's business card and say, call him at work. And we love that because the women are saying, I'm not going to regurgitate that because if you guys fix the wrong problem, then he's going to say, I didn't tell you what he said. So I want him to say it.
2 minutes.
And see, that's fair. That's fair. And that happens. So I'm saying to you ladies, that's the path of least resistance. Just give them your direct dial husband's number and have your husband explain what it is. Okay, another thing you don't want to do with car repairs. Oh, by the way, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open and there's five lines. Another thing you don't want to do is walk in and not tell us what the symptom is and tell them your brother in Minnesota said that you need to have your air filter greased. That's just not a good idea. It's not a good idea because the success of this symptom fix is in Minnesota. And so if you tell us what to do, we're going to put it down. Customer told us to do this. We're going to give you an estimate and we're going to have you sign that, because if that doesn't fix your problem, we're not in that food chain.
1 minute.
You diagnosed it. You didn't share the symptoms with us. You just came in and said, this is what I want you to do. Well, the success of that repair, or the success of repairing the problem, is on your shoulders, not on ours. But by and large, I have 38,000 customers, and there's probably 500 of them in there that are jerks. Everybody else is great customers. We respect them. They respect us. And oftentimes, I can tell you unequivocally, we're dealing with third generations. We got moms and dads back in the late 70s, and so we've had moms and dads, and now we have kids. So we have three generations of a particular family. And I think that's a nifty thing for us, because my kids grew up with their kids. And Renee and I grew up with the mom and the dad, so we all kind of grew up together. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have four lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I harp about the experience of the shop, and Larry Harker's Auto is a good example. They've been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto.
Mark,
they've been around.
There, you dropped.
Say that again. Hey, Gil.
Mark, are you there? You dropped.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. I don't know why you don't have me, but I'm not getting programming, that's for sure. Whatever happened, it was my fault, and we had some technical glitches here. And Gil, I've dropped a programming again.
No, I got you.
Okay. All right, I'm sorry. Then that's good. Okay, we were talking about shops and customers and good customers and bad customers and all that kind of stuff. I'll tell you what most of us do today. If we have a customer who just has unrealistic expectations, maybe a year ago, a guy comes in, and we're going to change his oil, and he says, and if anything happens after you change my oil, it's going to be your fault. Gosh, what do you do then? What about if you have a blowout? What happens if you have an upper radiator hose blow? What happens if your air compressor goes bad? It's my fault? So what we did was that we did his oil change, and we just held our breath. But at the same time, we just kind of flagged his file and said, every time he comes in from this point forward, give him a huge estimate so he doesn't come back. Now, he'll go tell everybody that Salem is really expensive, but most people that know him are going to say, oh, Salem's just dumped him because he's that way. So these are things that go on in the background. But if we don't, I can speak for my own shop. If we don't like you, if we don't want to be your car shop, we're not going to tell you you're a jerk. We're not going to tell you and get in an argument with you. We're just going to hit you with a really big estimate. You'll go away and that'll be it. So that's kind of how it works. When we talk about Larry Harker's Auto, it's a good guy. 67, he's been around 67. Bob and Ellen have been involved with Larry Harker's Auto and own and operate it. 38th Avenue and Indian School. And I can tell you virtually unequivocally that they are really good at what they do. And I've sent them a couple of cars that no one can fix, find or fix in his geographical area. And he's pulled the rabbit out of his hat each and every time. Each and every time he's been able to find and fix that car. So that's kind of a good idea, and it's the best thing that you can hope for is you find somebody. Now, when you diagnose, when you estimate that kind of a thing, obviously we're going to come in high. We're going to come in high because we don't know how much it's going to cost, and we don't know how much it's going to cost to fix it. The best that can happen, which is about 10 to 15% of the time, you find it and you fix it, and the fix is a dollar. Otherwise, you reconnect a wire, you fix a cut wire, you put a vacuum line back on, you tap this, you move this, that kind of stuff. So it costs you $200 to find it and $4 to fix it. But it could just as easily be $200 to find it and $1,100 to fix it. It just depends on that. So there's three parts of your discussion about money. What's the, how much the checkout's going to cost me? And then what's the parts and the labor and the total amount I have to write my check for? So if the checkout's $125 and they bid that, let's pretend they bid that. So $125, you bid that. And you say to them, if I need, I'll call, if I need more, I'll call you, but I think I can get it, you know, within this. This is 2.5 hours or 1.5 hours of my shop rate. So when they call back, they'll say, okay, I got it, and here's your estimate. So $500 estimate plus the $125, you got 6.25. You say to them, okay, if you're going to exceed anything 6.25, then make sure you call me and get an appropriate response to raise the authorized amount of money. Almost everybody has bidden with sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges. There's a lot of us that pride ourselves into coming in under our estimate every single time. What started that for me is that we had a customer that she just walked on water. We would do anything in the world for her. I mean anything. She was the kindest elderly lady that we've ever had. So one day her son calls me from Massachusetts. I don't know, East Coast stuff. And he just starts ripping me to shreds about some of the work that we've done to his mother's car. And so, you know, you do what you got to do. You just listen to him rant, and I pull up all the work orders. There's probably 30 or 40 of them. Which one are you talking about? What's the date? What? And he had no specifics. But he was just really, really mad, and he kept saying, you're just ripping my mother off. You're just ripping my mother off. So I have the ability to quickly go in and total up all the estimates and all the total actual amounts. So I said something to him like this.
2 minutes.
The estimate we gave your mother was X, and we've come in underneath that every single time. So we didn't give her an estimate and then bring our price up to the estimate. We didn't do that. So based on the 30 or 40 visits, the difference between what estimate she okayed and what she actually paid for is $2,100. So if we were ripping your mom off, why wouldn't we scarf that $2,100? So then I called her up and said, you know, I just talked to your son, and I know he means well, but I just want to let you know that the conversation wasn't really that good. And she says to me, my son's a jerk. Don't ever take another call from him. And then she said something about, he thinks you're wasting the money that he's going to get when I die. And I said, you know, this whole thing's a personal issue. I don't want to be involved. But she's still our customer, and I've already flagged this file, her file, that if her son calls, just tell him we can't talk to him and talk to his mother. Those are things that don't happen that often, but those are in the life of us, and everybody who owns their own business has the same kind of stories about when the pizzas didn't go well and when somebody found a fly in their pizza and all that other kind of stuff. It just happens. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines available, and you're welcome to call if you have a comment or a question, or if you want to talk about a particular symptom that you have, or how you were treated, or what kind of shop should you really look for, like the gentleman that said, should I use a body shop, should I use a mechanical shop, or should I use a glass company to fix this window problem that he has in his car. We'll be right back. About 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to do what I should have done last hour, but Bob, you have to forgive me. We had technical difficulties. Gil and I don't care whose fault it is. We just want to get it fixed, and so we stepped on you, but Bob, it's your turn, and I'll give you my 100% of my attention.
Hey, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just happened to be channel surfing through the AM dial and came across your program, and the integrity of what you were saying caught me. And I've actually never called a radio program before, and I've listened to several automotive programs, but the way you're talking and what you're saying, it makes 100% sense to me. So thank you for that, and thank you for taking my call.
You know, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, sir.
If you've got, like, is there anything left? Because I want to comment about what you said, but I'm willing to take your car problem before.
I do have a car problem, which was the impetus for my call.
Okay, go. You bet.
Okay, so I've got a 2013 Ford Fusion. I'm one of those fools that gets emotionally attached to their vehicles. I pay cash for them, and I drive them until they die a cold, hard death.
Okay.
So this vehicle has about 115,000 miles on it, and I live, obviously, in Arizona. So air conditioner is giving me some fits. On the driver's side, the two vents on the driver's side, they sometimes blow ice cold. They sometimes blow air temperature,
okay,
whatever's outside. But the passenger side always blows cold. And it seems like the only correlation I can make is when the thermometer on the dash gets to three digits, say 100 degrees or plus. I can't say if it's exactly the tipping point. The two on the driver's side, it takes about 25, 30 miles on the road before they start to blow cold. But once they do, they blow ice cold.
Okay.
And then there's a secondary symptom that every now and again, the air conditioner will kick on in the mornings, and then I have to turn it off. A couple seconds later, it kicks on again. I have to turn it off.
Okay. I'll take one at a time. First of all, the second one is really weird. So I would have to just operate the controls and verify that all the signals are getting there, but I can't really guess on the second one why the air conditioning is coming on all by itself. But I want you to take the negative cable off the battery, and I just want you to set it aside, and then I want you to open and close the doors, and let's drop all the capacitors of power, and I want you to turn the headlights on. Now, none of it's going to work, but I'm just using up some electricity that's being stored. So pull the negative cable, walk away from it for half an hour, come back and put it on, reset your clock, and see what happens. Sometimes it's just like your computer. We just need to unplug it and plug it back in. As far as the driver's side not having the same temperature as the passenger side, I want you to picture the ductwork underneath the dash is a Y, okay? A Y.
Okay.
So we got hot air coming in on the left side of the Y. We got cold air coming in on the right side of the Y. Then there's a gate there called the blend door. So if we want cold, it shuts off hot. If we want hot, we shut off cold. But if you're asking for 67 degrees and it's already 68 degrees, then this little door's flapping back and forth going, holy crap, how am I going to make him happy? So to test the blend door, you ask for an extreme. So on air conditioning, you ask for 30 below zero or whatever the gauge goes to. And if it's a heater, you ask for the highest heater. Then you're testing the ability of the blend door to work. So I think the first problem is going to be blend door. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to change your settings. I want you to go to maximum recirculation and see if that's different than normal. Maximum or recirculation, those are interchangeable words, or normal. And I want to know if it changes anything. Does it make it better, worse, or did that fix it? But I also want you to disconnect the battery first before you do anything else. And then how are you doing now? And then if it comes back, then the question is go to extremes, and then we'll decide that. Then you're going to go from maximum to normal. So we've got all these variables, but if you can pull this off, then you're going to save yourself anywhere from $50 to $150, $175 in diagnosis. Because you're going to show them how to make it happen. So,
okay.
Anyway, do you have a shop you like?
No, sir. I've never had to have this vehicle repaired since I've owned it, actually,
okay,
other than replacing, like a battery or a bolt-on part.
Okay. What part of town you live in?
Surprise.
Okay. I would call S&S Tire and ask them if they want to look at it, and if they say no, but they do mechanical work,
one minute,
this may not be in their wheelhouse, then you say, if it was your mom or dad, where would you send your mom and dad? Because that's a really valid question. And I usually start by saying, do you love your mom and dad? Yes. Okay, well then, where would you send your mom and dad for this particular problem? So I said one time, do you love your brother? And they say no. And then I thought, well, I better change it to mom and dad. So, and then you paid me a nice compliment, and I want you to know that this isn't a chest thumping show. I'm here for the callers and here to help educate people to walk the maze of car repair and to teach them what a bad guy sounds like and talks like. And that's really where it's at. But thank you for that. Tom and Cal, you'll be my next two callers, but Gil's calling me home, so I'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. Well, 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to go to the callers just like I promised. And, Tom, you're up first. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I've heard a while back you mentioned a place you liked that, about side-by-side. Was that in Casa Grande? What
retailer
was that?
What I was saying is that we actually work on those off-road vehicles. And we get to talk to the buyers and stuff. The place I told you was Four Seasons Motorsports in Rye. And I'll tell you what I know for sure. I've seen lots of estimates written, and it seems to be in some motorcycle places, quad places, they have the vehicle, and then they have freight and you know, desert protection package and the nitrogen and the tires, and they have all the, what they call pack. Dock fee. I saw a dock fee the other day of $499. And so Four Seasons just does this. You pay for the side-by-side, sales tax, and license. Period, period, period. So by referring my friends and stuff to Four Seasons, and I don't get paid for this, and I'm not going to buy any quads from them in the next couple years either, so they're not going to owe me. But I send people there, and Raymond and Vinny and what's the heck is his name? All three of them said, great. They beat other shops by thousands of dollars. Dennis, Vinny, and Raymond. All three of those guys went up there and bought, and I had feedback from all three of them. So Four Seasons in Rye is where I would go, and that's who I would talk to. There's a sales lady there that knows more about quads than five of my buddies. So if you get the sales lady there, she can help you. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. So I'm going to write down Four Seasons in case anybody wants to fight with me about that. Cal, you're up next. Cal, how can I help you?
I'm interested in synthetic oil. I've been using AMS oil since about 1983.
Okay.
And it does a whole lot better than others I have used before that.
Okay.
And I've been at it longer than some.
Okay.
And I hear you tell me that nobody makes oil other than the four majors. AMSOIL does have their own blending plant in Superior, Wisconsin. I've been up there two or three times, probably four or five actually, and seen it. They have tank cars come in there with base stock, raw base stock. It's a PHO. It comes out of Mobile, Canada. And then they use additives to make the
finished product
perform according to the ASTM standards. Now, you know, a lot of people will tell you, oh, motor oil is motor oil. Well, I kind of relate that to General Motors makes cars. They had a Chevette, and they had a Corvair, and they have a Chevy, and they have a Cadillac, and they have a Corvette.
Okay.
And all of them got four wheels and a steering wheel. So cars are just cars, right? There's
no
a difference in the reason why AMSOIL may be more expensive than some of the others. But
okay.
They do AM tests.
Okay. We're not going to do an AMSOIL commercial. I get your point. Let me comment real quick. Number one, you're wrong about a lot of stuff, but yeah, they buy base stock and then they do additives, and the additives are about 5 to 7% of the base stock. So you're right. ASTM is a standard. Everybody meets standard. So to suggest that some people don't is just not true. Everybody meets it. Now, you don't have to exceed it. You just have to meet it, and many of them do. Again, they're blending the oil, by your own words, they're blending the oil in Minnesota. I don't buy AMSOIL because we don't know what they do. And now I've got one of my technicians that puts it in his car, and I'm okay with that. I just like a bigger company standing behind my oil, the oil I buy, and I might pump 600 to 1,000 gallons a month. So I need a relationship with them. There's a lot of people that love different kinds of oils, and that's okay with me. If you love AMSOIL and you tell all your friends to use AMSOIL, I'm okay with that. If you like Shell or Phillips or Exxon or Mobil or any of the rest of them, you Valvoline, you can find all of those. But here's the problem. The problem is when you do base stocks and you start adding additives, sometimes it'll throw the oil out of spec. So if you take Chevron oil and then all of a sudden you start putting additives in it, which is extra detergents or a viscosity improver or a detergent, that oil's out of spec. So it's a bad idea to put oil in your car and then put an additive thinking your car's going to love you more because you just threw the oil out of spec. And so it's not going to perform as it was designed. And nobody knows if you added beer or wine or cow poop or whether you put more detergent in it or what you did. So I'm not going to move off my position that they make the base stock. Each one of the guys will then put their additives in it, and there's four or five additives. And in order for them to pass the AST test, they all have to hit that level. So their additive package is going to be pretty close to the same, while some of them may exceed in detergents and what. Detergents aren't scrubbing bubbles. It's the ability of the oil to hold the dirt in suspension, like a BB in a half-warm glass of Jell-O. So you put it in there and it holds the BB in suspension. That's what detergents. There's no scrubbing bubbles. But what really makes the oil good is when it turns to a tar and when it flows out of the can. So conventional oil is going to turn to a tar at about 230 degrees. So it oxidizes. Your engine's toast at that point. Just toast. A conventional oil will hardly pour out of the can at 15 below zero. Now, the blended oils, we open up the range. So instead of 230, we're up to 300. And instead of 15 degrees below zero, we're up to 30 degrees below zero. 30. It pours out of the can. Now, the low side, this pouring out of the can stuff, doesn't apply to Arizona. It just doesn't apply. But then a synthetic, it flows out of the can at 60 below zero, and I suggest, who gives a big rat's tail end that it pours out of the can at 60 below zero? But on the other end, the synthetics have a much better protection when the engine gets hot and the oil gets really hot. So they're going to be there to protect when some of the other oils will fail. But the biggest difference, two big differences in synthetic versus everybody else. Number one is the price, and number two is the oil change interval. Conventional oil is a 3,000 to 5,000 mile interval. It's only made for 3,000 to 5,000 in every car out there. A semi-synthetic is 5,000 to 7,500. That's the oil. It's slightly better, but no one knows the blend. Is it 90-10? Is it 90% conventional and 10% synthetic? Or is it 50-50? No one knows. No one cares. But on a full synthetic oil, you've got a 10,000 to 15,000 mile oil change interval. And obviously, people find that attractive. I have customers in my facility that we put an oil change. The oil in the car goes with their annual mileage. Little Grandma Moses drives 3,000 miles a year. I'm going to put conventional in her car. I'm going to call her in for an oil change in April so she goes through the summer with fresh oil. I would be foolish, and I would be a person I don't like if I sold her a synthetic and brought her in and changed it after 3,000 miles. That's just not right, and it's not fair. So I'm going to give them an oil that matches their use. So if my Grandma Moses drives 5,000 to 7,500, I'm going to put a blend. I'm still calling her in April. And then if it's a synthetic, I put synthetic in my truck. I come in once a year, and I'm running 12,000, 13,000 miles. So I'm okay. Now, some people are going to drive 6,000 miles a year, and I can either put them in conventional and bring them in for two oil changes, or I can put them in a semi-synthetic and just bring them in for one oil change. It's real self-serving. My industry is real self-serving when it comes to knowing those facts and being able to apply them to their customers. So thank you for your information on your AMSOIL. It's just not an oil that I choose to pour, but I've got lots of old guys that bring their AMSOIL, and I'm happy to pour their oil in their vehicles. So it doesn't really make any difference to me. When we get to... I've got something to sell. If you're looking for a motorhome, I have one. Renee and I just took this motorhome to Texas, and we had an uneventful day with the exception of I lost a hubcap. So it's a 94 32-foot bounder. It's got about 40,000 miles on it. It's been stored inside a lot, I would say 80% of its life. Here's the part that harms me. It has an F53 Ford chassis, which you've heard me say is the best motorhome chassis they ever built. It has a 460 fuel-injected Ford motor, and it pains me to tell you I bought a Ford chassis motorhome with a Ford drivetrain, but the F53 chassis is the best motorhome chassis there is. It has an Onan 7.0 generator, and so it runs both roof airs. It has dash air as well. It holds 100 gallons of water, 75 gallons of gas, and I want $12,000 for it. It just came back from a 2,000-mile trip, and other than losing the hubcap, I didn't have any problem with it at all. As you know, motorhomes don't typically get 16, 17, 18 miles a gallon. It depends on how fast you're going and whose foot's on the throttle. This one is going to be somewhere around 6 to 10, depending on hills, depending on headwinds, depending on how loaded it is and all that other stuff. So in November of 12, we rebuilt the entire suspension. I have all the gasoline, or I have all the log for this motorhome, and I have all the gasoline purchases for this motorhome. So you'll know what I've done to it and what parts I put into it and all that other jazz. So this is a great hunting mobile for some hunters. This would also be a good, for younger people that, think that they want to be in a motorhome. But this isn't something that, it's not a $100,000 motorhome. That's all there is to it. It's kind of like an old used car. But it's pretty, and the inside's nice. It has a side door. It has the rear bedroom. It has a bathroom. It has a kitchen dinette that folds into a bed. Then it has a couch that folds into a bed. So we can sleep four grandkids and then my wife and myself. And that's if she doesn't kick me out. So anyway, I haven't done an ad for a long, long time, but this motorhome belongs to me. I have all the maintenance records, and if you're looking for a motorhome, it's a bounder. It's a 32-foot bounder, and it's a Fleetwood product, 94 32-foot bounder. And it has, I'm asking $12,000. When we talk about car repair on a different subject now, if we talk about car repair, where you get your information is important. There's many, many people who get on the internet and talk to somebody who says they're capable of diagnosing their car over the phone or over the internet. I can't diagnose your car over the internet, and I've got a whole lot more experience than some yahoo in St. Louis. The fact of the matter is I've been a master tech for the last 25 to 30 years. And I ran my own auto repair shop since 1979, so 40 years. But I'm only as good as your answers. But there are times that people call back and say, Mark, you nailed it. And I give them credit because when I ask answers, they gave me good answers. I ask questions, they gave me good answers. So I can usually get kind of close if we just have that, you know, conversation. So be careful about the guys on the internet, because if they were really that good, they'd be working for me for $50,000 to $100,000 a year. But they're not that good. But they pretend they're that good. So when customers come in and say, the guy on the internet said, I need a mass airflow sensor, so put this on, we make them sign a waiver that the success of this part fixing your problem is not ours. So you're telling us to install this part. We're not going to diagnose it. We're not going to verify that it's defective, because if it fails 30 days, it's your problem, not mine. So those are the kinds of things I want to warn you about. Most of us play by the rules, and most of us know the rules. And we're there to, you know, really and truly think about it, I need to treat 99% of the people good in order to have a business that's going to be sustained for years and years and years. So that's kind of what it's all about. Those of you with Facebook.
1 minute.
You can go to Facebook and you can friend me or you can follow me. My wife and my daughter are absolutely adamant that I'm going to stick to car stuff. So I'm not going to get into politics. I'm not going to get into world problems. I'm not going to get into the presidential election. I'm not going to get into any discussion that my wife and my daughter find offensive. So I'm a car guy. So we talk about car stuff. So people will send a picture of some guy underneath the car being held up by milk crates. That's funny stuff. But we, if you have a car question or if you want to follow me, we do talk about cars. And that's an easy way to get me is just go to Facebook. So Mark Salem is my name. And you can go to Facebook and find Mark Salem. And then we'll hook up and you can, like I said, follow me or you can friend me. I don't care. So until then, my email address is mark@marksalem.com.